trans in the plant world too. We got bisexual, asexual, heterosexual, and trans. All these plants we see around us, and we don't maybe really think about all the ways in which they've got a whole rainbow of different ways of existing and surviving. And the ones that are here now are the ones that have survived for so many different changes climatically on the planet. And that's because they embrace diversity and they're not just choosing one path within a little box.
This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Massive protests answer UK top court's anti-trans ruling, queer community mourns death of more accepting Pope, and the natural world comes out with Jason Journeyman Wise. Those stories and more this week now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Natalie Munoz.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending April 26th, 2025. They were chanting, "When trans rights are under attack, what do? Fight back." Hundreds of thousands of protesters filled the streets of London to denounce the UK Supreme Court's decision that excludes transgender women from the legal definition of woman. The April 19th emergency demonstration in London's Parliament Square was organized by 24 queer and human rights groups on less than 3 days' notice. Organizers and police officials alike marveled at the size of the crowd that spilled over into St. James Park. Pink, white, and blue trans rights flags waved as passionate pro-trans speakers expressed their anger over the High Court decision. Demonstrations were also held in Liverpool, Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, and Nottingham. Photos of the massive crowds flooded social media. More than 1,000 people also marched through the central square of the Welsh capital of Cardiff. Future actions are planned for cities including Cambridge and Oxford. Protesters also hit the streets in Edinburgh and Glasgow, Scotland, where it all began. A 2018 Scottish law required that at least 50% of board members on public bodies be women. Lower courts had ruled that transgender women with gender recognition certificates declaring them to be female could be considered women for purposes of that law. About 8,500 gender recognition certificates have been issued, according to the Associated Press. The five-judge Supreme Court panel's April 16th decision overturned the previous rulings. It concluded that the legal definition of sex refers only to biological or sex assigned at birth. The High Court essentially rejected the concept of gender identity. Anti-trans forces interpret the ruling to mean that trans women and non-binary people can be blocked from using sex-segregated facilities such as bathrooms and changing rooms. It also implies that female hospital wards and sports could be closed to trans women. However, the Supreme Court insisted that provisions of the Equality Act barring discrimination against transgender people still apply.
If a person is gay and seeks God and has goodwill, who am I to judge? With those words, Roman Catholic Pope Francis changed the tenor of the Church's relationship with the LGBTQ+ community. However, he did nothing to change the Church's anti-queer doctrines. The complicated relationship with Francis that began in 2013 came to an end with his death on April 21st, the day after he celebrated one last Easter in Rome. He was 88. Compared to his predecessor, Pope Benedict, Francis seemed to regularly push the acceptance envelope. His famous, "Who am I to judge?" quote made headlines just a few months into his papacy. He took a stand against unjust discrimination against LGBTQ+ people in 2016. But he also said, There are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family. Francis opposed the criminalization of LGBT people in a 2023 Associated Press interview, saying, "Being homosexual isn't a crime. Persons with homosexual tendencies are children of God. God loves them. God accompanies them. Condemning a person like this is a sin." The Pope maintained a supportive relationship with Rome's transgender community, but in March 2024, he called gender-affirming healthcare a grave violation of humanity. Queer Catholics around the world acknowledged the two sides of Francis's legacy. The Global Network of Rainbow Catholics declared, "Catholics and people of all faiths and no faith have felt the power of his love and compassion for humankind, as well as for the planet that we inhabit." The organization Dignity USA said that he raised awareness of LGBTQ plus issues in our church in truly unprecedented ways and made a point of being seen meeting with LGBTQ plus people frequently. This sent a message of recognition and inclusion we never experienced from the Vatican before. To Australian Catholics for Equality, Pope Francis shepherded the church on an irreversible path toward becoming a more authentically welcoming and inclusive community for LGBTIQA+ people. The Tewksbury, Massachusetts-based group, Catholic Quest, called Francis's pontificate a blessing to the world and the LGBT community especially. CEO Sarah Kate Ellis of GLAAD mourned the Pope's passing, noting that she had met with him twice. To her, he was a transformational leader who included LGBTQ people in historic ways. Veteran British-based human rights activist Peter Tatchell has devoted decades to protesting the church's anti-LGBTQ policies. Extending his condolences to queer Catholics around the world, he offered, "While we often disagreed on issues of LGBT plus rights, I acknowledge his more compassionate tone towards sexual minorities."
The Trump administration is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to allow its ban on transgender military service to continue while its constitutionality is being challenged. A three-judge panel of the California-based Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals and several lower courts had issued temporary injunctions to prevent the administration from enforcing the policy during litigation. Lambda Legal and other queer and human rights advocacy groups challenging the ban say they'll soon file papers opposing the administration's Supreme Court request. Chaos reportedly reigns at the Department of Defense under the apparently hapless and incompetent Secretary Pete Hegseth. As White House lawyers pushed Trump's trans troop ban on April 24th, the Pentagon announced that it will resume gender-affirming health care for those service members. This according to a memo obtained by Politico. Coverage for those treatments was denied by the first Trump administration, resumed by the Biden administration, and then revoked again by Trump on the first day of his second term. The memo notes that a lower court has already struck down the Trump administration's anti-trans military edict as unconstitutional.
Another Trump administration order is facing a temporary roadblock. This one demanding that passport and visa applicants be limited to only male or female gender markers. A group of transgender and non-binary plaintiffs challenging the restrictions are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU says Boston-based U.S. District Court Judge Julia Kobik has concluded that the order is likely unconstitutional and in violation of the law. Her preliminary injunction requires the State Department to allow six transgender and non-binary plaintiffs to obtain passports with designations consistent with their gender identity while their lawsuit proceeds. Their attorneys plan to ask the judge to make it a class action lawsuit so that all trans and non-binary people in the United States will be protected. Several Western countries have issued warnings to trans and non-binary U.S. travelers. They strongly urge people with potentially problematic passports and visas with an X or any gender marker other than male or female to check first with their nearest U.S. embassy well before a planned departure.
Finally, a transgender teenage boy in Mississippi
must wait until he turns 21 to legally change his name to reflect his gender identity. Despite the consent of both parents, the Supreme Court of the Southern U.S. state said its decision is based on the boy's lack of maturity. Minors in Mississippi can usually legally change their name if both parents agree. Indeed, the state's laws allow 15-year-olds to even marry with parental consent. The boy's mother tried to initiate the process in July 2023 when her son was 16. The county clerk denied their request, saying he was acting in the best interest of the boy, who goes by the initials SMB. He's now 18 and will have to wait until 2028 to legally change his gender. Who's the one with the lack of maturity?
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending April 26th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Natalie Munoz. Stay healthy.
And I'm Tanya Kane Perry. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis, and you're listening to This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful morning.
Is Mother Nature really cisgendered and heterosexual, or are they something else entirely? Oppressive governments like the Trump administration may try to erase queer identities and histories, but science is recognizing that the rigid patriarchal binary view of the natural world is no match for the true, fluid, diverse, and interdependent reality. Jason Wise is a certified California naturalist and educator who's known as Jason Journeyman on social media for his videos on queer ecology. This Way Out's Jason Jen took a walk on the wild side to learn more about how an LGBTQ plus activist can change people's perspectives on nature and impact environmental policy.
Thank you, Jason, for joining us on This Way Out Radio. And we're so pleased to have you here to answer some questions about queer ecology, what it is, and what you do.
Thank you, Jason, for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about queer ecology. It's one of my favorite topics. It's such a powerful discussion piece for queer individuals, but also just for diversity in general. A lot of people associate queer ecology with gay animals. And it definitely is that. It is the LGBTQ, but it's a much broader topic. So when we zoom out on this more academic topic, it's anything that we observe in nature that defies Western cultural expectations. So that could be a heteronormative expectation, right? But it also could, it gets into issues of like the patriarchy or even sort of this Western cultural individualism, you know, pick yourself up by your own bootstraps versus maybe a more of a communal society. And we see examples of nature just having a whole bunch of different ways of organizing. There's social structures that do not fit neatly into a Western cultural box of the way that we think that humans are supposed to act. And maybe by observing all this in nature and also considering the fact that us humans are also nature, we're also animals, that it sort of explains, well, then that's why there's all this diversity even within our own species as well. Something that I do on my queer ecology walks, I start off with is asking folks to share
a place that they've connected to nature, right? It is an icebreaker, but it actually, it really leads directly into this topic because Western culture views nature as this thing over there, far away, separated, or something, and something that we can dominate. There's a hierarchy to it. We humans are at the top and we can do whatever we want to everything below us. When it comes to attacks on, you know, political kind of attacks on nature or queer people in general, it's all part of that same mindset that within Western culture, it's not just humans are at the top, but it's humans that fit into this right mold, this model of way, the way that you're supposed to be. And you get hints of that when, you know, just with the whole MAGA, Make America Great Again kind of topic of the way that it's supposed to be. And within that mindset, you can subjugate other people in the population that don't fit into your expert, what it's supposed to be, what we're supposed to be like. And you can also subjugate nature to whatever you want as well. You can drill, baby, drill without considering the consequences of destroying a landscape and how that ecosystem will eventually affect us, or the consequences of just continually burning things into the sky without regard for how that will influence or come back to us in the end, or come back to us already right now. The lens of queer ecology kind of lets us expose all of that, really.
Where do you see queerness show up in the plant world?
I kind of started getting into becoming an outdoor educator through my love of plants. So I like to call myself a plant daddy. And so on my queer ecology walks, I start out with plants because they're already showing us a whole array, diversity of ways of existing and reproducing. The biggest example we can start off with is that flowering plants, 95% of plants that have flowers use bisexual reproduction. So they have 90% of flowering plants have everything they do need to reproduce in the same flower. And then another 5% are in two separate flowers on the same plant. They have both quote unquote male and female parts, pollen making, which some in the botanical world would call the male parts, or the pollen receiving, which would be the female parts. You see me saying quote unquote, I feel it's a little bit odd that we're using an animal male and female binary structure for a plant that it's doing everything it needs to do to reproduce on its own. It's non-binary. 95% of flowering plants are non-binary. That's also known as a hermaphroditic plant. And those are botanical terms. The non-binary is something that I add, though, because it's like, I think that that reflects on ways that a lot of people are thinking now, like just discussing why are we putting parts of a flower in this binary structure. It's a relic, but it's part of this Western cultural mindset of humans in charge of anything, everything, putting our own expectations onto a plant. Plants are not just choosing one way to reproduce, but also asexual in a lot of cases. And just to get into plants even more, so there's that 5% that would be the heterosexual reproduction. They're making pollen on one plant and receiving pollen on a completely other plant. Except that those plants often will have asexual reproduction too. And except a lot of heterosexual plants have the ability to change their processes. So this has been done and shown in multiple studies where a plant in a community in an area where they're all just making pollen, there's so much we don't understand, but somehow they understand that, hey, we're only making pollen here. We can't reproduce. Someone's got to, okay, fine. I'm going to change and start receiving the pollen. I'm going to go from a male plant to a female plant. So there's trans in the plant world too. We got bisexual, asexual, heterosexual, and trans, like just in plants right there. So I start off with that to be like, all these plants we see around us, and we don't maybe really think about all the ways in which they've got a whole rainbow of different ways of existing and surviving. And the ones that are here now are the ones that have survived for so many different changes climatically on the planet. These are the ones that have survived, and that's because they embrace diversity, and they're not just choosing one path within a little box of like, well, we can only do this way. Those plants are the ones that didn't survive. The diverse options, these are the strongest plants. That's just how our ecosystem is strong, because of its diversity.
those fairies at the bottom of our garden. You cannot think how beautiful they are. They all stand up and sing when the fairy queen and king come lightly floating down upon their car. And the queen, now can you guess who that might be? She's a little girl all day, but at night she steals away. Well, it's me! Yes, it's me, oh, darling!
Wow. I mean, that's such a message for the importance and resilience of the LGBT community right there. And I think that's probably something that people want to repress, you know, that information or knowledge. I mean, do you find a lot of resistance from people in your teaching?
In my teaching in person, never. Because that's also people that come there to learn about this. They're curious about this topic. I don't get any pushback because they're like, tell me more. Instead, where I get pushback would be on social media, you know, because that's where you get, well, it's a much bigger audience.
The trolls.
And you never quite know, yeah, the trolls. You know, comments like, why are you queering up nature? Why are you like make it like I'm pushing an agenda on nature by simply talking about how plants reproduce or how animals get together in different ways? Well, I would argue that I'm just talking about biology. These are facts. You can look this up in an encyclopedia. I will put it together in a certain way that then reflects back on us people. But really, all the facts are there. They're real. They're indisputable. There is no political agenda on them. And I think what it really exposes is that that's the political agenda, that they're trying to ignore biology and the reality of the natural world out there because of an agenda that they've been convinced they need to follow. And I will continue to talk about these topics because I hope at least some people who maybe had this more rigid idea of things will have their mind open just a little bit, or maybe planting a seed of change. Be like, just to pause and think for a minute. Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that was happening, you know, and that can help to make some change in this world for the better. I work within a space of hope. I have to, especially with what's going on nowadays.
I know that there's been a lot of the government or different administrations locally that are trying to do things to address environmental problems, but sometimes they're making things worse. How do you deal with that? You know, have you found that some of the things that you've addressed are making progress or changing people's minds?
Just about 10 years ago, I quit my previous job where I worked in government affairs and advocacy. So I actually have a master's in public policy, and I focused on environmental policy. But right after grad school, I actually worked for AIDS Project Los Angeles for a while, working on policy issues with primarily the LGBT community, just working on housing issues and food insecurity and funding for HIV/AIDS research and assistance and things like PrEP. And so I in that job, I would go and actually talk to government officials and try and get them to do the right thing. Sometimes that's difficult. My favorite part about that, though, was actually being out in the community with community groups and educating them on how they can advocate for the future that we want to see. I quit my job not because I didn't believe in the cause, but because I wanted to be outside. I felt so stressed in an office and that kind of, that sort of setting. And I was looking for more of like, you know, a dream job. And I wanted to get back into environmental issues and or maybe figure out how to way to blend that all together, which I feel like queer ecology has really helped me do because it's environmental. It's part of my queer community and identity as a gay man. And then it also has this advocacy element to it as well. When we change our mindset away from that Western cultural aspect, we start to open up our minds and our doors and our hearts to a diverse array of people and not be scared of something like DEI, right? Or not treat our environment this way because we're all connected and we're all part of it. People have this mindset when there's after a disaster. And I get that, you know, that's sort of a shock to the system, but it's like, well, how do we you have a choice at that point. How are you going to react? And a lot of times in the past, people have chosen to try and fight nature like it's an enemy. You had the new president coming in here saying, we got to clear it out. We got to clear out the brush around the city. First of all, so many issues with even how that would even be feasible, because in this particular firestorm, wind storm, where embers were burning 3 to 5 miles in distance, according to the firefighters that were there watching the embers fly by and light another house on fire blocks away, that like, it's impossible to even do anything about that. So what, you cut in 5 miles around a barrier around the city of all that ecosystem, and you have to somehow maintain that? You can't clear that out. That's fighting nature again. There's so many ways that we could work with nature, acknowledge that fire is a real natural element on this planet and that it's going to be here. So how do we live with it instead of trying to pretend like we can somehow control it? Because we can't. We can't control that sometimes there will be floods. We can't control sometimes that there will be fires. So let's work with nature. Let's partner with nature. And that gets back to queer ecology. It's the same idea, because in that Western cultural hierarchy, we can control and dominate and do whatever we want to nature. But reality shows us time and time again with these disasters that that is not true. We are a part of it, and we need to work together in harmony.
How can people stay in touch with what you're doing, find you?
I'm on social media. My handle is Jason Journeyman. And I'm actually just about to start a little series of just queer-focused history that's being removed from, currently being removed from National Park and National Monument websites by the current administration. Like, example, the Stonewall National Monument, they took out the TQ, and now it just says LGB. And I'm like, you can't remove TQ from that story, because that is central to the story. People like Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera.
Thank you so much, Jason Wise. You are indeed. Thanks for joining us on This Way Out Radio today.
Yes, and thanks for having me, Jason Jen.
You can follow and learn more about Jason Wise and his various workshops and seminars online at jasonjourneyman.com. And hear the complete half-hour interview with Jason Journeyman on the This Way Out website, where he discusses more about the queer animal world, history of the LA River, and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Tanya Kane Perry and Natalie Munoz, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Jason Jen. Bill Withers and Justin Vivian Bond performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Brad Furr of KGAY Palm Springs, California, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CKUW Winnipeg, Manitoba, KMUD Arcata, Eureka, Laytonville, Garberville, Shelter Cove, California, WGDR Plainfield, Hardwick, Vermont, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.